Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 13th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, the WTO has kicked off its Hong Kong meeting. We'll have a report from that Asian city, courtesy of the Red River Farm Network and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. And we'll hear about a GAO report on the flaws in USDA's mandatory livestock price reporting programs. Two-thirds of the reports are said to be inaccurate. And Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and just a portion of the extra 15 minutes we recorded after Commodity Week finished up Friday evening. It's a program we call After the Bell, and it's only available to those subscribing to the WILL Weekend Ag Newsletter delivered by email. More on After the Bell later. And don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight, we'll be at the Yawning Civic Center in Kokomo, Indiana. Panelists for the meeting include Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities, Brian Maple of FC Stone & Company, and Steve Erdman of EFG Group in Chicago. That's a free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panel. No advance reservations are required. Tonight at the Yawning Civic Center in Kokomo, Indiana, the meeting gets underway at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. We hope to see you there.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat, 4.5 cents higher at 304. The March contract at 318.5, up 3.75. December wheat at the Kansas City Board of Trade, up 2 cents at $3.53 a bushel. Corn futures finished the December contract in Chicago at $1.95.5 today, up 1.25. The March futures at 208.75, up 1. And the May contract at 217.75, up 1 cent. December for next year, 245.25. They finished 1 higher. January soybeans, 597.5, up 13.5 cents. The March contract up 13.75 at 608.25, and the May beans at $6.13.25 were up 14.5 cents. November futures in the bean pit at 623.5, up 12.5. December bean meal 195.70, up 7.20 for the day. December bean oil at $20.90, were up 3 cents. Feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange 65 cents higher, 114.82.5 for the January contract. December live cattle 93.72.5, they were up $1.25, and December lean hogs 25 cents higher, 100 weight at $62.37.5.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this bean pit. Usually, if we're talking to you after a big up day on a Monday, it's turnaround Tuesday. That's not the case today.
No, well, we tried to, we had the big up day yesterday. We settled back a little bit. We started a little bit strong this morning. We sold off and looked like we were going to we went down to try to see if we could break out to the bottom side, and the market just got very, very quiet, very light traders. The 1230, a player sheet, in fact, the largest players only had done 300 contracts apiece, which is a very small volume in the bean pit, and after they couldn't take the market on down, Revco stepped in, bought about 3,000 March beans, and that run the stops and started the short covering or the fund buying, started triggering stops, and along the way into the close, we saw some of the market advisory services were stopped out of some of their short hedges in the corn and the beans, And it just sort of snowballed after it couldn't go down earlier in the day. So, but we saw some very quiet market times for the way the market reacted today.
Would you term REFCO here as their fund side was buying? Is that right?
Well, we would have to say that's who it is. But I mean, we don't know who it is. We just, on the player's sheet, it popped up as REFCO sometime there after the 12:30, about 1:41. Looks like they stepped in and bought about 3,000 contracts March beans.
When we talked with the folks at the Andersons yesterday about cash grain sales, beans were coming out of the bin. Were you talking to your producers about selling cash beans today?
You know, we had a couple calls about that, but most of the farmers over here got their beans in the bin are pretty stubborn holders, and they got those bin doors locked. But we did hear some beans that did move on some $6 cash offers were left at the elevator yesterday, and in some areas where the basis levels were, that they did move a few. But I don't think quite as many as that the processors hoped for.
Any idea about expectations for tomorrow's trade?
Well, of course, it was a strong close today. This will turn a lot of the programs, keep them friendly. So if we look for anything to happen, it'll probably be a few more stops being run and a little bit of positive attitude. So definitely a strong close in both the corn and the beans. And at higher levels today, and showed a little bit of follow-through, which we haven't been seen as of late, Todd.
In the corn pit December contract, $1.95.5, and I know this is in expiration, but $1.95.5, and she stopped there. That's pretty good resistance on the top side.
It is. And, as we look at the March corn, 208 to 209 has been very strong resistance here. The 210 to 212 area is... if we close above the 212 area, well, then that projects on higher. But there does seem to be quite a bit of resistance, up in that area. We do still have a pretty hefty carryout coming around, even if farmers aren't selling grain right now. And we do have to remember that there's a lot of corn piles out there that probably are going to be scheduled to be moved to sometime in January, or at least a good share of them will be.
And are you telling producers that they need to be ready to make sales fairly quickly on rallies?
Well, we've already made our sales for up in here. We did them back, when the basis was just a little tighter. The basis has got a little sloppier here the last few days with this up move. We probably, we'll be doing a little further pricing on some little more up moves here. But, we done our December, January-type pricing a week ago when the basis was about as tight as it got.
Anything else to add for the day before I let you go?
Cattle and hogs had a nice rebound today, a little bit of enthusiasm over there about opening the opening the market to the Japanese that way. But the pork probably still a little, it's going along strong with the beef, but looks like it could get heavy soon.
Wayne, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will be along to take a look at the agricultural weather. A winter storm watch is in effect for far northwestern Illinois from late tonight through tomorrow evening, and a winter weather advisory in effect for north central and northeastern Illinois tomorrow and tomorrow evening as well. Ed Kieser says tonight across the two-state region in Illinois, mostly cloudy skies, some precipitation arriving from the west overnight, that in the form of snow in the north and a wintry mix in the central and rain in the southern sections. Indiana, mostly cloudy, lows from 18 in northeastern Indiana to 35 in far southern Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a look at the agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Brazil-led G20 group today says a draft deal on slashing rich nations' farm tariffs must be reached by April, or the Doha round of world trade negotiations faces failure. And the G33 group, that represents 45 developing countries, including China and India, says it expects rich countries to protect its farmers from the effects of trade liberalization by allowing the protection of up to 20% of existing tariffs. Top trade negotiators from nearly 150 countries kicked off a week of talks today in Hong Kong. Mike Hergert of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting has more.
Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns told reporters here on Monday, "We've got to keep our eye on the bigger picture. which is removing distortion from agriculture.
We have said all along, this is not about unilaterally disarming. That's not the way this works. The way it works is we all take a step forward together. Then we take another step forward together. We put forward a bold, ambitious offer, but it was contingent on getting market access. There are parts of the world where it's just virtually impossible for our farmers and ranchers to market their products because tariffs are too high. And a tariff acts like a tax on the product, and it makes that product from the U.S. Uncompetitive with the same product from another part of the world. So we have to do everything we can to bring tariffs down, and we've said, look, our offer moves forward, contingent on our ability to achieve market access.
Although he does not expect as much of a result at this ministerial as once was hoped, Johann says he does not think this ministerial will end in complete failure like the two previous ones in Cancun and Seattle.
Disagreements over food aid to poorer nations intensified today between the U.S. and European Union. EU Trade Chief Peter Mandelson demanded, in his words, radical reform of the U.S. system as part of a broader deal on agricultural reform. Outside the meetings, nine protesters were injured in a scuffle with riot police, who sprayed the crowd with pepper spray as they tried to rush police lines. The Government Accountability Office today says meat packers provided inaccurate information on nearly two-thirds of audited USDA livestock mandatory price reporting reports. The GAO audited the reporting system at the request of Iowa Senators Charles Grassley and Tom Harkin. Grassley says the GAO report shows serious flaws in the USDA price reporting law. Well, Harkin says USDA does not let the public know when it finds late or incorrect information. Japan's major supermarket chains expressed caution today, a day after the country's U.S. beef ban was eased, wary of loading their shelves with American steaks when finicky Japanese consumers might not yet be ready to fire up the grill. One of Japan's largest supermarket chains says there is no plan to stock U.S. beef unless customers demand it. A recent poll in Japan showed nearly 70% of respondents were against resuming U.S. beef imports. Phil Tseng, CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, says it will be years before the U.S. recaptures what once was a $1.4 billion beef market.
Well, I think it's going to be a protracted process. I think it's going to take at least probably 3 years. I think now, as with this market opening, we're looking at possibly 15% of the cattle today that will be eligible. We need to get, of course, up to 30 months of age or beyond 30 months of age, at least having Japan accept international standards. And I think once we have that, then I think we're going to be able to sell much, much more.
The first shipment of U.S. beef heads to Japan on December 17th. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns yesterday called on Taiwan, Hong Kong, South Korea, and Singapore to follow Japan's lead and open their markets to U.S. beef. Meanwhile, USDA's Inspector General says it will release in January its findings on how USDA failed to detect mad cow disease in an infected cow. Scientists declared in November of 2004 the cow was free of BSE, but further tests 7 months later by other U.S. and United Kingdom scientists discovered mad cow disease. In other beef news, Japan yesterday announced it might revise a law that raises tariffs from 38.5% to 50% on imported beef if imports year to year increase by 17% or more. Resumption of U.S. beef to Japan is expected to trigger the higher tariff, but Japan's farm minister says government officials should not apply the tariff unless U.S. beef imports negatively affects the domestic industry. And a new study by the American Farm Bureau Federation says fewer farmers will produce a larger share of American food during the next 14 years. The report says currently about 3,200 farmers produce a quarter of the nation's farm products. Another 140,000 farmers produce the next 50% of farm output, and they are the ones most likely at risk to stop farming. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. He'll be at the Johnning Civic Center in Kokomo, Indiana this evening at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, along with Mike Zuzolo, Brian Maple, and Steve Erdman of the EFG Group. That for another one of our WILL AM 580 Ag Outlook panels. That's at 6:30 this evening at the Johnning Civic Center in Kokomo, Indiana. No registration necessary, and it is absolutely free. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis takes a look at dieting and how some diets were derived.
Does anybody really think that the Agriculture Department's latest food pyramid guidelines or the South Beach diet are the last words on nutrition and diet? Absolutely not. The history of nutrition is replete with remarkable discoveries, missteps, triumphs, and quackery, and it's not over yet. The fascinating story is contained in a new book called The Terrors of the Table by British biophysicist Walter Grotzer. The book was released just in time for Thanksgiving and the Christmas holiday season when the enjoyment of food is high on the agenda. By New Year's, most of us will come to regret our overindulgence and vow to reform. The terrors examined in the book have little to do with overindulgence. Instead, the terrors are nutritional deficiency diseases such as rickets, scurvy, and beriberi, which along with malnutrition can lead to debilitation or death. According to Grotzer, it was a Roman who first put forth a theory of nutrition based on balancing four bodily humors, blood, phlegm, green or yellow bile, and black bile. Those theories spread around the world, lasted more than a millennium, and did incredible harm. The theory was more than a fad, but sounds similar to the way some people now shun specific foods and eat large portions of other foods. Long before the Atkins high-protein diet, Dr. James Salisbury advocated eating a patty of grilled chopped lean steak for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. These burgers weighed about a pound each. His 19th century diet didn't survive, but Salisbury steak still is on the menu in many restaurants. Natural foods or organic foods aren't a new fad either. An early advocate was Sylvester Graham, a New England minister and lecturer who wanted to return to the diet he imagined that Adam and Eve first enjoyed: fruits, nuts, seeds, milk, and honey. 200 years later, natural foods are again popular, and a cracker still bears Graham's name. Much early dietary research stemmed from trying to find the best rations for soldiers in wartime. Today, a healthy diet for the world's population is more often associated with bringing peace and hope. Unfortunately, Grotzer is not only complimentary of today's food industry and agriculture, perhaps due to his European background, but he suggests that the future of nutritional health lies in nutrigenomics, or the tailoring of diet to one's genotype. Now, we wait for someone to shoot holes in his basic theory of how we should eat. Meanwhile, let's enjoy our holiday feast. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. Well, sometimes after we're done recording Commodity Week on Friday evening, Commodity Week's our half-hour-long look at the markets that airs on Saturday, we leave the mics on and continue the conversation in a much easier fashion. There's no time here on the station to air this program, so we bundle it with our weekend newsletter as an audio program for the web only. It's called After the Bell. It's an occasional program, and it's only available to those that subscribe to our Weekend Ag newsletter. Now, I left the mics on last Friday evening for an extra 15 minutes. You'll hear about four of those minutes now. The first voice, other than mine, you'll hear is Joe Victor. He's with Allendale. Steve Erdman of the EFG Group is there, too, along with Wyatt Muse of the Andersons. Now, here's an excerpt from After the Bell. We just finished up a conversation about selling some cash corn now.
We're all good?
Yeah, I think for the most part. I mean, that's the only thing we do is be ready, have the offers in. You know, I think Ed just spoke last.
Yes,
and I like his plan. You got to be leaving firm offers. We call them just in case offers. That if this market decides that all of a sudden the funds, you know, you've got Southern Pride saying, hey, we made double the amount of money we did last year because of cheap input prices.
sooner or later, the funds are going to pick up on that. They're going to see $1.90, $2 corn futures. And, guys, remember, what did we rally on last year?
Yeah.
And for soybeans took off, corn took off, and why did we rally? Strictly because the funds bought something cheap. And that's what we're telling our people is be ready. You've got to have the orders submitted that when this thing starts to explode, just because we got, you know, $2.4 billion domestically, that's impressive. It's a big cushion. And I liked what Steve had to say at the end is we've got much better usage now than we had back in 92 when we had similar type stocks. But we are still the second tightest since 1980 globally.
Yep.
Exactly. Globally, we are still the second tightest. So if somebody runs into an ouch and they need corn, we know who's got the store and the best price for it.
Guys, take a look at a copper chart. Look at what China has done.
Oh, yeah.
To copper.
Yeah.
If anybody would have suggested that the world economy was strong enough to dictate this kind of rally in copper prices, look at sugar prices. I mean, it's just, you know, I agree with what Joe just said, and I think my only disagreement with Wyatt is I get scared to death when farmers start to do basis contracts because then they start rolling it.
I totally agree.
Pretty soon they're, you know, like 80 cents under the deep.
Paying back the other
low eight or something. So,
now, I'm with you on that, and they have to have the discipline in hand to make sure that they're not going to hang on to that. You know
what
sure
I like better, Wyatt, is like Ed said, I'm a futures broker, obviously, but I like them flattening stuff out and then buying the board. Because there's a distinct difference between having to send margin checks to me or going out and patting the bin and saying, well, I didn't get it sold, but it's still right here, you know. It forces them to have discipline in their marketing, because if they're long the board and they've sold their cash and the market starts to deteriorate again, they've got to react or else send checks.
13-year basis history tells us that if you're holding, if you haven't done anything with basis into that Jan-Feb time frame, and the first planters, and I'm talking to planters going into Texas and the Delta region, when they start going in, you don't look for basis to start to strengthen. And I concur that, you know, the spreads are not there right now. The spreads say, boy, you could store this till 2 years out. I mean, the spreads are extremely wide, but we're poised again. If we start to see those spreads narrow in, and we do see, similarly, in like the soybeans, 576, 581, you got a little bit of that dribble to go. The basis has responded favorably. And, again, leave yourself a just-in-case order, because, guys, we're going to wake up one morning, just like we did today, and see a bearish report and then scratching our head saying, that was pretty impressive to see a positive close. 2 weeks, by the way, before I forget, 2 weeks we've had higher weekly closes, both corn and beans.
Yep.
I like that.
I think beans are going to rally up to over $6 basis March.
I'm ready.
Spot beans are going to see a little bit of a rally now. Hey, basis will reflect it. The basis will start to soften again.
Yeah.
That was Joe Victor of Allendale, along with EFG Group's Steve Erdman and Wyatt Muse of the Andersons, in a segment we call After the Bell. It's only available in its full program format on our website if you subscribe to our newsletter at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your local newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Prosecutors say Maurice Legrone Jr., who's accused of drowning his then-girlfriend's three young children in Clinton Lake, wanted them out of the way because they interfered with a lifestyle that revolved around sex and drugs. A transcript of a May court hearing about the case was released today. It's the first time prosecutors attempted to answer why Legrone Jr. allegedly killed the children in 2003. Their mother, Amanda Hamm, is also charged. The Champaign School Board wants to hear what the community has to say on plans to improve school safety. The Unit 4 School Board is holding a special town hall-style meeting on the topic Thursday night at 7 at Stratton Elementary School. The school safety issue gained a high profile last month when a fight erupted at Champaign Central High School. Unit 4 officials are considering a plan that includes stationing uniformed police officers at each of its high schools. The Champaign City Council is scheduled to evaluate public comments on its Neighborhood Wellness Action Plan tonight, but no public comments have come into the city's website. Council members will still discuss potential updates to the plan, which covers everything from public safety and upkeep of property to housing, infrastructure, and citizen involvement. The city plans to hold additional public meetings on the Neighborhood Wellness Plan as it works on updating it. Indiana State University might have a hard time convincing officials that the state needs a third public law school. Indiana's Higher Education Commissioner says the school's proposal may not fit with the state's economic development plan. Industrial air pollution has created health risks for many neighborhoods in Illinois, and it's not just a Chicago problem. An Associated Press review of federal data ties pollution to an increased potential for health problems. From Decatur and Granite City to Peoria and Rockford, more than 280 neighborhoods in Illinois are considered having among the most unhealthy air in the nation because of industrial air pollution. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather on this Tuesday afternoon is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, this afternoon, cloudy skies, about 29 degrees here on the campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, but I suspect it'll get colder fairly soon.
Well, it's going to get warmer, then it's going to get colder. There's a storm system coming out of the western plains that will bring southerly wind flow into the Midwest, and that's going to help warm things up. But once the system goes off to our east, we're back on the backside of the storm, which will pull down some cooler air out of Canada. It looks like for the end of the week and the weekend, we don't see anything tremendously cold, but temperatures on average are going to be about anywhere from 5 to 6 degrees below normal heading into the weekend and into the start of next week.
Some winter storm watches and winter weather advisories out for parts of Illinois right through the evening this evening. What kind of precipitation might we see?
Well, you're going to see different precipitation depending on where you are. Central and southern Illinois going to be on the edge of the rain and snow initially. Up north, north central, northeast, and northwest Illinois will be looking at possibly several inches of snow. That would include the Chicago area into eastern sections of Iowa, as well as into the southern Great Lakes. Now, it looks like southern and southeastern Illinois will see more rain than snow, but once the system heads off to the east, the cold air comes in on the back side of that, bringing a wintry mix to the area.
And turning our attention to the agricultural forecast across the globe, let's go to the plain states here in the Midwest. Tell me how the winter wheat crop is faring.
Well, it's okay. It started off the season with warmer than normal temperatures and dry conditions, and then we had an Arctic blast come in last week that didn't have much snow cover with it, but maybe enough to not cause any problems. They could use some more moisture, and I think they'll get a little bit of it, although precipitation is going to be skimpy in those plain states. So there may be a little concern that with cold winter temperatures, some of those wheat areas will see not enough precipitation. There could be some freeze damage in some areas. We'll need to watch that.
And let's stay with wheat and move to Australia, where I believe it's the midst of harvest.
Well, they are going to be a little bit moist in some areas, especially the central and eastern areas, as a very active pattern has developed. So there could be a few harvest delays there because of rain.
And South America for the finish of the planting season, and certainly a good start to the growing season.
Yeah, and that trend is going to continue. There's going to be decent precipitation over the key growing areas of South America. Brazil, probably the most moist. Argentina, a little bit drier, but even Argentina looking at near normal precipitation. And as you look at temperature conditions down south, well, all of those areas are pretty close to normal, maybe just a touch cooler than normal in Brazil, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Have you seen a vegetative map to get an idea how that crop is coming along?
Well, it's been about a week or so. I haven't seen an updated one, but things are looking good. They're really off to a good start down there. And with no indication of any significant El Nino or La Nina that may affect their crop this year in terms of a weather pattern, it looks like they may be headed towards a normal growing season down there.
Other places, Don, that we need to check in on at all, or did we catch them all?
I think we did it all.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49. That for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and the weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to WILL.com. WILL.UIUC.edu. As always, click on AM and Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.